too. I'm excited about the conversation that we are about to have. We're going to look at South African history retold, the Mbokodo edition. And we're joined by the author, Ketiwe Zulu. She's the author behind this lovely project, really a beautiful project. And she joins us now. Good afternoon, Ketiwe.
Good afternoon, Asanya. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. Yeah.
You're healthy, you're safe.
Yes, I hope you're also healthy and safe too. You know, I was thinking when I saw the details about this book, and I was thinking of that famous quote that was shared or put together by Unknown, that here's to the strong women, may we know them, may we be them, may we raise them. And I think what you've created here is a project that fits with that perfectly. But you are the same Ketiwe Zulu who did a board game around South African streets before, right?
Yes, same person. Yes.
This is your thing. Just quickly describe that project before we get into South African history retold.
Okay, it's I'm on a quest to develop a South African history retold encyclopedia. That's what I want to do. And it's going to come out in different editions. The first edition was just the street names, because as I was navigating the streets in the country, I didn't know who the people that they were renamed after were. And I felt that I should maybe find out. So the first book is a compilation of the names, national street names, that have been changed into our struggle icons. Just a little bit about who the people that the street names are now named after are. Mm. And after that, I turned that book into a board game. That led to this second edition, because in the first edition, only 26 women that I profiled were the street name changes. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I've heard that there's far more women who are in the liberation struggle than just 26 that I've written about. So I went on a quest to write about more, and I found 100. And I know there were 20,000 that marched, so 100 is only a minuscule amount, but I thought it was a start.
It's so interesting what you say, because historically we know that women's contribution has not been made prominent. In some cases, it's been erased, or it's made a footnote in the struggle for freedom of any society. And this has been, it's not just in South Africa, it's the world over. Women's names, women's contributions are simply removed from the annals of history.
Not only that, what tends to get to me the most is that those that do become prominent and written about are in relation to their husbands. So it's not only just Albertina Sisulu, it's Walter Sisulu's wife. Mm-hmm. And what we forget is that these people were icons in their own rights before, many of them before they met their husbands. So the relation too takes away from just who they were as people originally without getting married.
I remember 2 years ago, in fact, Zondeni Veronica Sobukwe, that was the late wife of the struggle icon Robert Sobukwe, when she passed away in 2018. It was also the first time that many people became aware of her contribution and the role that she played, because she herself made an incredible, apart from being his partner, she had her own story and her own struggle and her contribution as well. So absolutely true. It's often in relation to men. I think it was, I can't remember when it was actually, but in recent months, looking at statues, even it was the tearing down, yes, with the Black Lives Matter movement, the tearing down of statues that was taking place, particularly in the UK. The question arose as well about how come we don't have women's statues to the same degree that we have men, for instance. And if we look at celebrated men, not necessarily problematic figures in the past, but celebrated figures, we have far fewer women. And this is also something that we need to reflect on.
Definitely. Definitely. And I think the unfair part, like you were saying, is that it's not as if they don't have a story of their own.
Yeah.
Just simply because they've been written out of. I mean, like a few of the names that we're going to go through, you will see how history has just completely written them out of the narrative. And I knew most of the men in the South African liberation. When I start to research and find out that there were a partnership with the women to do some of the stuff that has was happening at that time to liberate South Africa, I was shocked. And I thought, how come like I never heard that this woman was part of writing, for example, researching the Constitution, when I know LB Sachs?
Yeah, yeah. Precisely. So let's actually get into what this book is all about. So you actually start with a few very provocative questions. When, where, what? And with the where, you say, in what year did Lizzie Abrams die? I mean, I have to concede, I don't even know who Lizzie Abrams is. So to even start to guess the year, I'd be doing some guesswork there. And then things like, where was Fatima Meer born? You give us five options there too. International capitals, including Durban. And what was the name of the university where Loretta Ngobo graduated with a degree in teaching? Also, once again, like this list of multiple choice answers. But what it demonstrates as well is how little we know, not just of the women figures, right, but also just about their lives, how little we know about their lives and their contribution. So you have selected, so before we get to those women, what will we find? What will we find in South African History Retold, the Mbokoto edition?
Okay, I think for the people that already own the first edition, we'll kind of recognize the style of the second edition. I didn't want to write a history book. I feel that the reason why history is sometimes overlooked is because it's just so tedious to read page after page after page or about somebody's life. So what the book is every woman that I have profiled is honestly at most three paragraphs of their lives. And it's because I wanted to write a reference guide. I wanted to whet somebody's appetite enough to say, I want to know more about this woman, and then use my list of references to do your own research and expand on the knowledge that I've started. So it's a snippet of who the women were. It's an easy read. It can be read by children 13 and above, very accessible language. And that is how I plan to do every book that I'm going to write about South African history, is a snippet of a place and a date and a person in time.
Hmm. So let's dig into the stories of four women for the purposes of this particular conversation, even though there are many, many more, of course, in the edition. Let's start with Annie Silinga. Who was Annie Silinga?
Annie, I must admit, Azania is my absolute favorite. Annie, I think it's just because of her absolutely cheeky defiance of apartheid, and also her commitment to what she is known to have said. And she's known to have said that I will never carry a pass. And the full quotation is, I will never carry a pass until Mrs. Slaydom carries one, because I'm a woman and she's a woman too. And it's a very cheeky way to defy the apartheid system, but it also made sense. And really, she was a member of the ANC, and she was eventually, because she just refused to carry a pass, she was banished to the Transkei, and that meant that she had to leave three children behind and a husband, which was really the cruelty of apartheid. They didn't care about a family structure and a family unit. They could easily take away a mother for years on end, either to imprison or banish or whatever they chose to do. But she was banished to the Transkei. She returned illegally back to her home in Cape Town. And she was eventually charged with treason for the 1956 treason trial. And she was the only woman from Cape Town to be charged with treason. And what I love most about Annie is that she died, having never carried a pass.
Wow. And that was only in 1984. So, I mean, many of us, this is not so, the history or the recency of it is not that long ago. So in 1984, yes. And so she was defined till the very end, till the very, very end. Yes. I see you also yes. note that, she was through, civil disobedience was a thread in her life right through.
Yep. And she didn't mind the labeling that she's a civil disobedient individual. She really didn't mind what she wanted. I think what she wanted to do is prove and stand by the word that a pass for a black woman should be a pass for a white woman, and we should be equal. And if they won't carry passes, neither will I.
Yes.
And what I couldn't see is the amount of torture she went through for her to prove that point. And she eventually died and she proved it. She never carried a pass.
Yes. And then let's go on to Dorothy Adams. She was born in 1928 and she died in 2011. So who was she?
Now that's the one in particular when I say that when women are totally just written out of history, it becomes absolutely amazing. Dorothy was a teacher, and she was very religious. She came from the African Methodist Church, and she kind of felt like church wasn't doing enough to speak out against apartheid, and that led her to being an activist. And she was arrested for sabotage with 11 other people, but refused to testify against them. She was eventually banned, and banning meant you weren't able to speak. Or so that means she as a teacher, she wasn't able to teach. So that means she couldn't put food on the table for her children. And eventually she went into exile in Britain. And she is someone who worked with LBSAX to research our current constitution. Now, that was a shock for me because, like I say, I knew of LBSAX. I knew what he had done. Never had I heard of a Dorothy Adams who was anyway associated with the research of the drafting of our constitution. She eventually came back to South Africa in 1991 and worked for the Truth and Reconciliation Committee. So she was one that was really testament to how women can be written out of history sometimes.
And then there was Molly Blackburn, born in 1930 and then passed in 1985. Tell us about her life story.
And that's another one that was a shock for me.
Yeah.
Most people know of the Craddock Four.
Yeah.
Craddock Four, Matthew Kanyewe, Stello, Sparrow, and Fort. They know what they stood for. They spoke largely against any laws that were unjust. But what I was shocked at is their association with a woman. Matthew Kanyewe specifically asked help from Molly in order to sort out the rent reconstructions that were happening in Craddock.
Yeah.
Craddock people were already, the township was already poor. So the raising of rent was something that they couldn't afford.
Yes, and just Molly, unconscionable. Yeah.
Okay. And Molly is the one that said, listen, formalize a structure. And the structure was then called the Craddock Resistant Association. And it was formed out and formed out of her Summerstrand home. And I thought, why don't I know about Molly if I know about the Craddock Four? And when they were eventually killed, she was largely a part of holding the police accountable into, first of all, they disappeared, so find them. Secondly, when they were discovered, they were murdered. we want answers as to why they were murdered. She was largely part of that, the team that was making the holding the police, the apartheid police accountable. And eventually they admitted that it's because all enemies of the state should be eliminated. That's why the cradle of four was what was killed. But furthermore, when there was a crossfire in PE and a little boy was killed, she took the T-shirt of that little boy and sent it to the Minister of Safety and Security at that time to symbolize, look what you have done. Why don't we know about a Molly Blackburn? And we know about the Title IV.
Yes, and I mean, that brave confrontation, a bloody T-shirt, one that's riddled in bullets, taking it, confronting the Minister of Safety and Security, saying, this is what you have done. You must see, you must look at the consequences of your decisions. And she died in a car collision in 1985. Was there suspicion around this accident, this car accident?
Nothing in what I researched.
Okay.
Says that there was a suspicion. The only thing I can say is that it always came after the fact that she received numerous death threats.
Mm.
So I think because it wasn't proven, researchers don't want to just lay it out there and say there was a suspicion. But of course, the following of the sentences makes you wonder. But no, nothing in my research says that she was killed by the state.
Well, as we wrap, let's take a look at one more woman that we have, highlighted for today's conversation, Zainab Ibrahim Asfat.
What I liked most about her is she's symbolic of the fact that just because you are young, it doesn't mean that you have control of your final destiny, political destiny in any country.
Yeah.
She was only 20 when she joined the movement, and she was studying to be a medical doctor. Stopped her studies to join the passive aggressive campaign in Umbilo Gale Street, Durban. And eventually also that demonstration was attacked by some white hooligans, and they assaulted some of the women. And when she was asked as a protective measure to just step away from that particular demonstration, she said no, and she stayed on. And even though she was brutalized and kicked by the white hooligans, she called for peace in a speech and said, please don't retaliate. And in 1956, during the treason trial, she decided to organize a group of women, because obviously the people, the hundreds and so people that were charged with treason were breadwinners.
Mm.
So them in prison meant that their families were left completely destitute, without food. So she organized a group of women to raise funds to feed not only the people awaiting the trial, but their families.
And she was also the sister to Amina Kachalia, right? And we know her contribution. So she would follow in her sister's footsteps in becoming an activist.
And that was a nice story to put together, because I knew of Amina, but I never knew of Zaid. It's amazing how much I didn't know in my research.
Yes, absolutely. I also can't say that I've heard of Zainab Ibrahim Asfat before, even though that's a surname that we're familiar with, Asfat, Dr. Mm-hmm. Asfat, in from the 80s. Let's go to Heidi calling from Durban. Hello, Heidi.
Yeah, Azania, you know, you guys, you're just blowing my mind, because this is exactly what I was reflecting on Women's Day for myself. You know, just the leaders of that march in 1956, Lillian Ngoyi, Helen Joseph, Rahima Musa, and there was one other lady. And it's terrible. I mean, why do we not have a statue? Why do we not have a statue with Lillian Ngoyi there? And your author, I mean, exactly. We need to rewrite history. Our voices need to be heard. You guys are just blowing my mind. I mean, you know, it's just a discussion for, and the politicians, they've let us down. Why has no one fought for this?
Mm.
This is our history.
Mm. I know. I think we also need to agitate and amplify our voices, Heidi, because it's raised precisely because as women, because, you know, it is the story of the men that is being told and their contribution. Yes. So as women, we need to say you cannot forget the contribution that women have made, the women who came before us. I'm with you completely about that sense of shock. So well done, I think, to Ketiwe for putting together such a collection of names for us to become newly acquainted. Heidi, thank you for your call. But just a quick one, Heidi. When you're saying the statue, there is a statue, in fact, of Lilian Ngoyi. It's in a square in Pretoria. Yeah, yeah, but there's obviously a scope for more to be done.
Yes, we know one. We know of one.
Yeah.
But look at all the others. Look at the others that your author is raising. I mean, these are sacrifices. These are brave women. Brave women who made tremendous sacrifices, all in the name of apartheid.
Yes.
Never even mentioned. And women like me and you, who should be talking to our daughters, telling them. These are stories that should be heard and amplified. I mean, instead, we drive past, and I'm not being funny here, and no disrespect to the man, we drive past Moses Mabhida Stadium. I understand the legacy that he's left behind, but why couldn't we have named that stadium the Lilian Ngoyi Stadium? Where is, you know, where is a place, a high-profile place? You know, it's just, you know, it's time to stop this now, really, honestly.
Heidi, thank you for your call. Here's a WhatsApp. It says, that is my grandfather's sister you are talking about. And yes, it is Amina's sister. Just referring to Zainab there. Oh, thank you for the WhatsApp. And I wonder what your sentiments are regarding how history has documented or has reflected on her legacy, Zainab Ibrahim Asfat. Maybe you could drop us a quick note on that one. And so where do we get the book, Ketiwe? How do we get it on our bookshelves?
Okay. The book I sell on my website, ketiwezulu.com. And what I have done is I have developed an additional 150 questions for those people who already own the board game that they can add to their existing board game. But these 150 questions are now just pertaining to the women in the liberation struggle. And all those products can be found on ketiwezulu.com.
Ah, fantastic. Nice and straightforward. Thank you for joining us and really all of the best. And may this grow. May the voices of these women, may the work that you are doing continue to grow and unfold. Thanks, Ketiwe.
Thank you, Asenia.
ketiwezulu.com.